Now, at the beginning of chapter 3, what do we find? How does chapter 3 open? It opens with these words. Then indeed, the Bodhisattva Ruchiraketu slept. But that's rather an anticlimax, surely. Ruchiraketu has had all these wonderful experiences. His house expands, he sees the four Buddhas, the Buddhas speak to him, then he goes to sleep. But of course, we must be on our guard. The dream that Ruchiraketu has, that he's going to have in this chapter, the Bodhisattva's dream, is no ordinary dream. And similarly, his sleep is no ordinary sleep. In order to understand it, in order to understand his sleep, we must take a closer look at what happened in the previous chapter, and then we'll be in a position to pass on to the dream itself. In the previous chapter, as we've just seen, Ruchiraketu has a whole series of experiences, of spiritual experiences, transcendental experiences, and as a result of those experiences, he is transformed. But the experiences are not complete. The transformation is not complete. And we can understand this from various indications. First, Ruchiraketu himself occupies, still occupies, the center of the mandala. He sees the four Buddhas. East, south, west, north. But he is not yet himself a Buddha. He only sees the Buddhas. The innermost core of his being, what makes Ruchiraketu Ruchiraketu, is not yet transformed. Buddhahood, clearly as he sees it, sublimely as he sees it, truly as he sees it, is still something external to himself. It's still something out there. And his realization, therefore, though genuine, is still as it were mental, still as it were in the realm of mundane consciousness. It has not yet completely permeated, completely transformed all aspects of his being. And moreover, his problem is still with him, even in the midst of the mandala of the four Buddhas. His problem is still with him. It's true that he now has the solution to his problem, but so long as you have the solution to the problem, you still have the problem. What you have to do is to forget both problem and solution. Only then have you really solved your problem. And this is what happens now. Then the Bodhisattva Ruchiraketu slept. And as I said before, it's no ordinary sleep. It represents the complete erasure, the complete obliteration, the complete blotting out of the old self, the old consciousness. In Shakespeare's phrase, it is the sleep of death. Not the sleep of physical death, it's the sleep of spiritual death. It's not the death that comes when we have shuffled off this mortal coil, it's the death that comes when we abandon all previous conditionings. In other words, if we want to develop spiritually, we must die. If we want to be completely transformed, as distinct from being merely peripherally transformed, we must die. We probably heard of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, as the Bardo Todol is known in the West. Well, we may say the Sutra of Golden Light is also a book of the dead. we may say that every Buddhist scripture is a book of the dead, because every Buddhist scripture, every Mahayana sutra, asks us to die. Because every Buddhist scripture, every Mahayana sutra, wants us to be transformed. That's why the scripture, that's why the sutra is there at all, as the agent, as the instrument of that transformation. If we're not prepared to die, we cannot be a bodhisattva. We cannot be a Buddhist. The Tibetan Book of the Dead is concerned with spiritual death in the context of physical death. But we have to be ready to experience spiritual death at any time. We have to be ready at any time to give up the old life, the old self, the old consciousness. Have to be ready to forget the old problems and the old solutions. We have to be ready to make a completely fresh start. Otherwise, we cannot be totally transformed. So, then, the Bodhisattva Vajrakhetu slept. And in the middle of his sleep, he had a dream. He saw a golden drum, a drum that shone just like the sun in the midday sky, a drum that radiated brilliant golden light throughout the whole of space. And he also saw in all the directions innumerable Buddhas, and these Buddhas were seated on thrones of burial under trees made of jewels at the head of assemblies numbering many hundreds of thousands. And Vajrakhetu saw a man in the form of a Brahmin beating the drum, and while the drum was being struck, verses came forth, and these verses are the celebrated verses of confession that make up the greater part of this chapter. It's these verses that are the original nucleus, the center of energy of the entire sutra. And as one might have expected, this being a dream, the verses don't seem to come forth in any particular order. There's no logical sequence. They just flow forth, they stream forth from the golden drum, as the golden drum is struck by the Brahmin like a great stream of golden light. And they can be divided into 10 main sections. And all the time, of course, it is the drum speaking. It is the golden light speaking. The golden light is the sound of the drum. The sound of the drum is the golden light. It's what Coleridge called a light in sound, a sound like power in light. And both the drum and the golden light are part of Vajrakhetu's dream, are in Vajrakhetu, so it is also Vajrakhetu who is speaking. Not the old Vajrakhetu, but the new Vajrakhetu. The first section of these verses, these confessional verses, is a prayer. A prayer that by the sound of the drum, the world and all living beings may progress. In other words, it's a prayer for the complete transformation of life and world. In the second section, we have the drum speaking as Vajrakhetu, or Vajrakhetu speaking as the drum and making the Bodhisattva vow. The drum, or Vajrakhetu, vows to attain supreme enlightenment for the benefit of all, vows to dedicate himself to the great task of life and world transformation. So we see that the influence of the golden light is beginning to make itself felt. The third section is a lengthy confession of faults. Rushrakhetu acknowledges all the unskillful actions which have hitherto prevented him from realizing his ideal, from being a bodhisattva, a real bodhisattva, from becoming a Buddha. And this is followed in the fourth section by a promise to worship the Buddhas in the ten directions and deliver beings in the ten directions. This section is, in effect, a more detailed statement of the bodhisattva vow. And among other things, Rushrakhetu undertakes to expound the Sutra of Golden Light, or rather, the confession, which he refers to simply as the Golden Light. In section 5, there's a second confession of faults, rather shorter than the first. In section 6, there's a brief rejoicing in merits, rejoicing in the merits of all those beings who are performing meritorious deeds. In the seventh section, there's a third confession of faults, the shortest of all. Section 8 is taken up with praises of the Buddha. And here we find that solar imagery is very conspicuous. For instance, it's said of the Buddha, "He is the Buddha's sun, removing the obscurity of darkness with his rays of compassion." And "He is a fully enlightened sun, also with meshes of beams, full of glory, merits, and splendor, he stands amid the darkness like the sun in the three worlds." Section 9 contains more aspirations, good wishes, and rejoicings in merit. And section 10, the last of the sections, declares the advantages of worshipping the Buddha by means of these verses of confession. So from this brief summary, this brief analysis, we can see that the main subject matter of the verses is confession of faults. Though this is balanced, as it were, by the bodhisattva vow, by praises of the Buddha, and by rejoicings in merits, we can see, or perhaps at least some of us can see, a resemblance between these verses and chapter 2 of Shantideva's Entering the Path of Enlightenment, the Bodhicharya Avatara. So that what we really have here is a rudimentary and unsystematic, but very beautiful, sevenfold puja. We'll be dealing with the content of these verses next week when we consider the spiritual significance of confession.